What are you going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
Welcome to another edition of Meet Me at Musial. I'm your host, C70, Daniel Chaptal. You can find me at C70 at the bat, on Twitter at C70. With me, joining me as always, Alan Medlock from the Redbird Daily, and found out amedlock1 on Twitter. We will be joined later in the futures report by Kyle Reese from the Redbird Daily, but we'll get to that soon enough. As always, we appreciate anybody that's rated and reviewed us, and if you haven't, we would appreciate you just going in there, clicking a star or two or five, and letting us maybe rise up the rankings to, well, getting ranked. I don't know. Who cares? But anyway, just for the heck of it, and to feed our ego a little bit, because we're thin guys. Our egos are thin. We need them fed. So go ahead and do that. That's the only thing thin about us, right, Alan?
That's right.
It has been an interesting week for the Cardinals. It has been a fun week for us. We're going to talk a lot about Sunday and our trip to St. Louis and our discussions with John Mozeliak. We'll do that in our middle section. But before that, let's just go right ahead and talk about the last week in the Redbird Rewind.
He got it! Struck him out! Look at the scene on the field. McCarver, the first one. Now his infielders all over him. A new world's record of 17 strikeouts in one game.
And Alan, kind of that one of those weeks, you know, they win the three against the Phillies and people are feeling pretty good. They win the first one against the Brewers and then it just kind of all falls apart. But in a way, I was listening to, I think it was STL Cargills today, or maybe it was even Derek Gould's show. There's a couple of places I've been listening. And these losses, as aggravating and frustrating as they are, don't feel as quite as demoralizing as the Reds and the Cubs, just because they were really in it in every game.
Oh, absolutely. I felt really upbeat when we came after Sunday. I was like, okay, you know, you kind of got it out of your system against Philadelphia. You had a couple of hiccups. You held them down, you know, tried to give away that game on Sunday, but worked out of it. And you moved into the off day on Monday, and then you moved into Tuesday. Go out, play well that first game. The night game I was excited about because you had that Marco appearance. He looked good first time through the lineup, second time through, not so good. I think that's probably more of a sign that, Mozeliak had mentioned that they're trying to figure out what they have with him. Well, and I think he may be one of the big bullpen pieces that the Cards will have before too long. But looked good first time through, then gave up a lot of hard contact, the rest of that appearance. But then, you go into you give the lead to, in the 5-5 game, you give the lead to your best reliever in Rosenthal. He can't hold it down. You know, he has one of his outings that were kind of like last year, which he's going to have every once in a while. Mm-hmm. You know, you do that, and that's the guy you want in that spot. He can't hold it down. Then what compounds the frustration is you go to the next day, and the starter that you want on outside of Martinez, the starter that you want on the mound, is Leak, and he was not very good in the first two innings. So it was just kind of a comedy of errors in the Milwaukee series where I thought they could probably make some ground but end up losing a game. It is frustrating, but they seem to be in every one of them. I'm not sure what that means for them as a team, but I would have much rather won 3 out of 4.
Yeah, I mean, as I wrote in my post today, you start the homestand 4.5 games back. you end the homestand 4.5 games back, and that's, I mean, that's kind of frustrating, because basically you've taken a week off the schedule and done nothing with it, and not only a week off the schedule, but a week go ahead.
I think we're going in the exact same spot. A week off that 4 to 6 week, you know, that's, you know, it's 4 to 6 weeks. That's one of the weeks down. So I figured that's where you were going.
Yeah, and you know, that's big. I mean, Mo did say on Sunday, and again, I don't want to talk too much about that before we get into the other thing, but he did say that was kind of an arbitrary number. But it fits real well with the fact that that's getting right up into the All-Star break, and that feels like that's where you've really got to decide what you're going to do. And, you know, weeks like this make those decisions come a little faster. You did see a good outing tonight, but, you know, I was following some Oriole Twitter, and they're not real sold on their team either, even though it was only a game under 500. They're really feel like it's struggling too. So, you know, maybe that doesn't tell you as much as you'd like it to. I guess it is frustrating. I mean, you saw Mike Leake. I think that's the only starter that melted down. But he, you know, he had a bad first two innings. He stuck in there, and you got to give him a little bit of credit for that, because they could have easily had to burn through their bullpen after having a doubleheader the night before. It was one of those things that Leake was going to have to pitch, and he kept them in the ballgame. You know, granted, they were in the hole because of him, and you can't overlook that. But, you know, if Kevin Segrist doesn't give up a run, you know, maybe that game winds up being tied then with Diaz's home run, and who knows what happens. You know, so kind of the same thing. But I guess it is frustrating that, you know, we're kind of used to the bullpen struggling this year. But this week, you saw people that don't normally struggle. Like you said, Rosenthal had a bad game. O had a couple of rough outings, including, you know, the one against Brewers that lost the game. You saw Leake have the rough one. You just saw some pitchers that you kind of felt like you could rely on kind of burn you, and I guess the kicker is, how much do you rely on those pitchers going forward? And especially start with Sung Hwan Oh, because it feels like, you know, he's been kind of shaky all year. You know, do they ever think about moving him, not only either out of the closer position or off the team in a trade?
Yeah, I mean, that's I know that just from you and I talking about this, outside of, you know, Lynn, I think Rosenthal and Oh are probably two huge pieces you could go out and get three or four players for if you're not going to go all in and get that one big bat. But yeah, you're right. I was thinking about that Sunday while we were there, and said, I was like, you know, he's just, I don't really have a lot of confidence in him, and I was glad to see him finish it off. If he gets a base runner on, I get nervous. I would almost like, you know, loyal to a fault a little bit. We know how they are. I wouldn't mind Rosenthal getting a few more save opportunities, just because I have a lot more confidence in him just through, you know, the history with him, and he's looked good this year. You know, he'll have his blow-ups, but into the back of the bullpen guys always do. So, I don't know. I really don't know. This is one situation where I do kind of feel bad for Matheny, and I know people don't want to hear that, but any button he pushes is wrong. In the bullpen, you know, there's some guys that I'm like, Cecil's looked a lot better. You know, Bowman's hot and cold, but he's still, they still have a lot of trust in him. Brevia, you've noticed that he's getting a lot of high leverage situations, but it's just the big guns, which we still assume is the best part of the bullpen, being the back half of Rosenthal and Oak. It's still, there's just a little bit of hesitancy on that, and no matter what button Matheny pushes, it's almost always wrong. I know a lot of people won't want to hear him get credit for these situations, but I kind of feel that's where it is.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, when you look at this last week, ever since Mozeliak's press conference, and for those that missed it, Alan and I talked about the press conference last week. You'll find that episode 32. You can find that on the website, or, you know, if you've subscribed to us through iTunes, you can go back and listen to that, because we're not going to do a lot of a discussion of that. But since then, I mean, you look at the losses that they had this week, and even in the wins, I don't feel like, and maybe it's partly because I didn't watch as closely, you know, with traveling and various things, but it doesn't feel like there were a whole lot of questionable decisions made by Mike Matheny this week. You know, there were some decisions that didn't work, like bringing Rosenthal into a tie game. That's what you want to see, but it didn't work. You know, you brought in Owett at times, maybe it didn't work. But I don't feel like there was just anything that just didn't make any sense. There was no pulling Lance Lynn at 70-something pitches. There was no, you know, really sticking with somebody too long, because I feel like, you know, both Leak just got burned too early. Walker kind of fell apart, but it was in the fifth inning, and, I mean, Matheny got him out of there before he allowed a run in the fifth, but he had loaded the bases. But still, there wasn't a whole lot of difference there. I mean, maybe a batter faster, but that's about it. It doesn't feel... I mean, there have been some really questionable decisions by Mike Matheny this year, but in this set of losses right now, and maybe that's why it's less frustrating, because it is on the players, it doesn't feel like he's made too many real goof-ups right now.
No, none of the split-second lose games type, I agree with that. I really wish he would reevaluate the lineup just due to the Matheny factor. And that may be coming. You know, if Pham builds off the home run tonight, you may be forced to leave him in the middle. It's kind of funny. I thought Jericho was hitting his way into an off day tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, just didn't – he looked like he was lost. And then, of course, he hits the ball a long way the opposite field. So, you know, that's he's still one of your better players. He's kind of in a slump, kind of came back to earth a little bit. But hopefully he'll come out of that, mainly because he's probably not getting anything to hit, you know, with Matheny or with Molina behind him. So that's the only thing I can think of right now. I don't think any of them were his fault. I think it's a lot of the guys in uniform right now that aren't performing. But hopefully they can turn the corner. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, looking at Jericho before tonight, for the month of June, seems a good enough place to look. He's hitting .244 with just two doubles, and those are his only extra base hits. Three walks, 11 strikeouts. It does feel like he's slumping some. And you know, that's fair, because Jericho, as we've talked about, is not a fourth hitter. He's not a four-hole hitter, but he's the best that this team has, at least right now, and that's where he's got to be, and that's going to wear it sometimes. He did get that long one tonight, although I think everybody got one tonight, it felt like.
The ball just flies out of there, so you can't really tell.
Because I didn't feel like when he hit the ball there in the ninth, I mean, which is good. He struck out three times before that. At least he hit the ball. But it just looked like it was going to be kind of a fly ball, and it just kind of carried enough and got over the wall, which is fine. Obviously, he'll take it. But I don't know that you're going to indicate that he's, you know, back or anything of that nature, but you know,
sure.
I mean, that's part of it. He has played a lot of games. There's not a whole lot of backup there, and he's one of the big, you know, big offensive threats. So he is going to play. I think that's, you're right. That'll be interesting to see how much they can juggle him over the next few days, because he probably could use a little bit of a break. Go back to Sung Won-oh for just a minute. I was looking at his stats for the year, and tell you what's scary, his whip is 1.42. basically every inning he's putting a runner and a half on.
Yeah,
I mean, that's kind of scary. I mean, was a guy, you know, last year it was 0.91, and I don't think anybody expected him to do what he did last year, but you know, he's already getting close to as many walks as he had last year. He's getting close to as many runs as he gave up last year, and in about half as many innings. I mean, you're right. When do they go to Rosenthal a little bit more? I mean, I'm sure this week didn't help him any, but, you know, if Rosenthal goes out there and throws another couple of scoreless innings, I mean, what do you think it takes for Mike Matheny to maybe break out of that mold and let, even if nothing else, split time at the closer role?
Well, I think that it would be quicker with it being Rosenthal than it was last year, than it affecting Rosenthal. Because I thought they stayed with Rosie about 3 weeks too long last year. I don't think they'll do that. I think that probably will be – it's easy for him to come out and sell that, hey, we're just going to kind of relieve him of pressure. He's still our closer. We're just going to give Rosenthal some closing opportunities, and, you know, that you could kind of wean him in that way. I don't know. That's the thing is with Matheny, you just never know. You just never know when he's going to hold on. You know, like I said, loyal to a fault sometimes, and hold on to some of these guys. And then next thing you know, he'll be hitting Carpenter leadoff again, where I thought that was not necessarily overdue. but it kind of looked like a panic move when it happened. So, you know, I really don't know. I would rather see Rosenthal get some opportunities at the end of games, just because I think he's the better option. And I've said all year, even in before the season started, it is such a fickle position, that closer's role, that not many of them do it multiple years without having hiccups like this. So, long answer, but hopefully he kind of relieves some pressure on O before too long.
Yeah, hopefully so. You're right. I mean, because of the small sample size, because of how little that they're seen, you know, fluctuations in relievers is just insane. I mean, the idea that you can have a consistent one is difficult to find. So it's not too surprising. You just wish that you could get a little bit more than 1 year out of them, because that feels like that's what the Cardinals are doing right now. They get a good year out of the closer, and then either they get hurt or they become ineffective and they have to switch at some point in time. And then, you know, the next year they think they got one, and then they, you know, there's not a consistency there, which can be fine. I think to some degree, closer, you know, the closer in quotes is overrated somewhat. But you do need to have somebody that you trust back there. So, hopefully will. Like you mentioned Matt Carpenter hitting leadoff. You know, he's been doing that for pretty much this week and hitting a ton. Dexter Fowler moved down to second. It's hitting a ton. I mean, he's got what? Dexter's got 3 home runs. I think Carpenter's got 4, maybe 5 over the week that he's been doing this. I know it's not the way we drew it up. I know it's not the way we'd probably prefer it. But if it's working, and for whatever reason it is, whether it's because Carpenter has to hit leadoff or not, that's a different story. But you just got to leave it, right?
Oh, I agree. Their offense is, if they would have the output that they have, that they're having right now, it's easy to say after they score 11 runs, but offensively they look decent against Milwaukee. If they had this with the pitching they had for the first month and a half, they may have a pretty good lead right now. So, you know, I think you've got to leave it as is. You're right. It's not how we, not how it was drawn up, and they wanted to have that mainstay in the 3, and it kind of goes back to Sunday. I think that Mozeliak made that clear that you know, we'll get to that here in a little bit, but this may be their best configuration for right now.
Yeah, as you point out, I mean, since the switchover, the Cardinals have had a serious game, 6 runs or more, 5 of the 7 games, and the 2 that they didn't, I guess 5 of the 8 when you go back to last Friday when they only scored 3, but you know, the other 2, they scored 4 and 5. So, I mean, they're putting up runs much better than the 2.5%, you know, 2.5 runs a game that they were averaging there for a while. I mean, they scored as many tonight as they did, I think, in the whole Cincinnati Reds series, you know. So they are, you know, and again, when you can get Fowler and get Carpenter going, that's what we've said all year long. If those guys would hit, this team would look a lot better. Right now, they're hitting. Unfortunately, now they've waited long enough that the starting pitching is kind of a little shaky. But it does feel like, again, you're right, Yadier Molina has no business hitting 5th or whatever that he's been hitting. But it kind of feels like you could see that lineup being good again. Even if they didn't add a piece, you can kind of see that now, where about 2 weeks ago, I don't think anybody could have thought that was the case.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that Pham has his addition has been big, and you know, he's kind of had, you know, kind of dips, but the home, you know, he hit that bomb tonight, and he just, his speed adds a little bit to it as well. You know, his strikeouts are going to be there, where probably higher than they need, but I still think that he's the best option in the lineup, and I don't know what that says about Grichuk either, but yeah, you're right. I don't. I think that they do need that one one piece to revolve around, but I still think they'll be able to score runs with what they have now.
Yeah, and I think
Wong may hurt. I will say Wong may hurt.
Good point. Wong going on the disabled list today or yesterday, I guess. Paul DeJong coming back up from Memphis right after being sent back down earlier in the week. I mean, you and I've talked about that. It sounds like it's a different arm this time. Somebody indicated it was a different arm than the arm that Wong was dealing with before. But, you know, forearm strains can be, especially in pitchers, one of those precursors that you start seeing before Tommy John surgery. Again, I don't know that there were there on Colton, but it feels like this is going to be something more than just another 10-day thing, and then they'll, you know, put him off the DL and he'll play again. It feels like there may be some serious stuff needing to go on here.
It seems like it. And the clubhouse, the post game after whenever he was pulled, they made it sound like that as well. That it didn't look good, that you kind of hold down the fort because it may be a little while. So I don't know. I'm ready to get some clarity on that, which I'm surprised we haven't heard anything at all. You know, that's I don't know if it's battery, a test, MRI, what they'll do, but you know, I was surprised we hadn't heard anything. But that's kind of how they operate. So it's can be kind of disappointing sometimes. So it does seem like it'll be a little extended, which then really raises some questions about you know, what they will probably do moving forward, which could be very interesting.
Yeah, and it probably helps if they want to keep things quiet, at least, that the team went out of town. You know, all the riders go with them. You're not missing Colton Wong because he's not with the club on the, you know, that kind of stuff. Surely we'll, you know, obviously there's still people back in St. Louis. We'll find out soon enough. But, you know, them going off on a weekend, they may be able to keep things. And again, maybe one of those things where they can only do so much, you know, with the weekend and coming up and stuff like that. May take some time to get results back, things like that. Not saying that the Cardinals are trying to hide anything or trying to keep things quiet. It just may not be able to know that. But losing Colton, because who was hitting very well? I mean, he was right up around 300. And given the start to his season, that's a pretty good run. was playing solid enough defense. I think there's some varying ideas of Colton's defense. There's no doubt he can make great plays.
Sure.
There's no doubt he can, you know, botch some plays. Overall, I think he's at least average, maybe a little above average. And that's fine, especially with the bat. Again, Colton Wong is not likely to be a superstar, but he can contribute to the team, and that's what he was doing. So to lose him, you're right, it becomes interesting. Do you let Paul DeJong play there? Because it felt like they sent him to Memphis so because he was getting a little exposed. Obviously had a great night tonight, but playing against a team that hadn't seen him yet. You know, I mean, there's not a whole lot of book out on him. You know, then, you know, do you get Greg Garcia do there? Do you let Matt Carpenter play there? Seems unlikely, especially not with you know, Pat Adams not around anymore. But you know, I mean, there are various options. But you're right, that's gonna be big and something to watch, especially if Wong is out for any length of time.
Yeah, that's my first thought too. Was I know that we'll get into this a little bit later. What we actually think we'll do in both extremes, whether they start winning or whether we feel like they may have to do a little bit of a dump. It does give you, it gives you a spot that you have to upgrade. You know, that could be that would be somewhere else they could go look, and that could possibly be a rental type situation. I would say that would be, I know everybody's going to say this, but, you know, that's where Dozier's name is going to get brought up if they weren't in first place. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one where you could say, okay, see what it could take to get, you know, if you bring him back, you find a spot for him. I don't know. That could find, with Wong being out in an extended period, that could be somewhere you could look to upgrade. I don't know. Just me personally, if they upgrade, which I think it'll probably be an outfielder, if not, whatever bat they can find, which they can find a suitable deal, I think they're going to bring him in and everybody else is going to move around. So that could add another layer here to where you may see Jerko start playing more second base. I don't know. But it kind of gives you a little bit of flexibility. But just like you and I were talking about yesterday, not only was Wong hitting, I truly think their infield defense is improved. Mm-hmm. I think they've improved a lot from last year and from the beginning of this year. I think that Karp is receiving a lot better over at first. I think he's improved. Now, just like we talked about too and saw in person Sunday, his footwork leaves a little bit to be desired. But it still looks like he's digging those balls out of the dirt and mainly the throws from the pickoff attempts, because he literally looked lost there for a little while. Jericho's a good third baseman. I think Diaz has improved, and he's not going to get the credit that he deserves, I don't think. But I did think Wong was their best infield defender, so it may hurt him a little bit. But as options. I think you'll see DeJong for, you know, until we know something. But I think that gives them another opportunity to maybe go and a built-in excuse to maybe have to upgrade.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see there. I don't know. Yeah, we saw Carpenter kind of dance around first base a little bit tonight too on a throw from DeJong. So
yeah,
it feels like he, you know, he's still working on that footwork, trying to figure that out. But it does feel like he's catching the ball a little bit better, and like you said, picking the ball out a little bit more. Before we leave this week, I guess the biggest other thing to talk about really is Michael Wacha, and we referenced it a little bit ago. But mm-hmm. you know, three innings that were okay. Well, I guess he went four innings, kind of okay. Then, you know, loading the bases in the fifth, not getting anybody out. You know, you were talking about Marco Gonzalez being a bullpen piece, and that's something that a lot of people were saying that as well. But it feels starting to feel like Michael Wacha may have to be that as well. Wacha, you know, since that infamous sit him down and rest thing, he's only gone into the sixth twice. There's been a lot of times where he hasn't gotten through the fourth. There was one game he didn't get out of, you know, he finished the third and that was it. It just doesn't feel like, it feels like first time through he's okay, but after that he gets ugly fast.
Yeah, I agree. And that's, I wonder now if that, the rest or whatever they told us was a rest or just a chance to eat innings, which I thought made complete sense, if there weren't some warning signs that there may be something wrong. But I think that they probably would have shut him down a longer time than they did. But just makes you wonder a little bit if they're just like, okay, we kind of saw this pattern. You know, when he started the last 2 years, maybe that will happen. I think that we would see a DL stint before we see a bullpen piece. And the reason I say that is exactly what Mozeliak said at the meeting. That made a lot of sense. Looking back, though, last year whenever they shelved Wacha, he did make the comment. He goes, we may have to reevaluate him as a 200 inning pitcher. Mm-hmm. You know, it may never happen for him. We may have to reconstruct the roles for him to fit in with the organization. I mean, he basically verbatim, you know, what he said. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, what he said to us on Sunday made you think, well, that makes a lot of sense. That's the, you realize that they're human beings, you know, the men, not machines type comment. So I think that we all agree that may be a better move. I'm just not so sure they're going to do it unless he gets some time off, you know, DL time, which I think we'll see that before anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll see the DL as well, but it also boils down to, you know, as you said, Bo didn't really, you know, there were a lot of things that go into that kind of decision, because of the even the money involved and things like that. But, you know, if it's better to be a quality reliever than a terrible starter, I think. I mean, I get that starters make more money,
yeah.
But if you're not getting through the fourth inning regularly, you're not a starter. I mean, you may start a game, but you're not really a starter. You're just a long man that happens to start. You know, and I think that's where they've got to figure out exactly what he is. And if it's a health injury, because if that stress reaction is flaring up again, and we don't know that it is, we haven't, you know, I don't know that anybody has, you know, done comparisons on velocity or spin rates or anything like that to see if there's some injury possibilities there. We're just looking at flat out results. And if it's there already, even though they've tried to manage it, I think you just start to say, look, he can't start anymore. He can be effective otherwise, but he cannot, it's just not worth trying to juggle around for 5, 6, 7 good starts a year. I mean, that's just not, you know, I don't think that's worth it. Now, again, we don't know that he's hurt right now. It could be something else, but it's very weird to see Michael Wacha just really, I mean, really bad. I mean, he's not having any success at all for the most part. I mean, he was pretty good against the Phillies, but everybody's pretty good against the Phillies. And except for that, it's just, I mean, you just hold your breath because you know a meltdown is going to come, and you know it's probably going to happen before the fifth inning.
Yeah, it's you kind of feel like you're outmanned, and it starts a little bit. And I hate that because I really like him. You know, it's I really wish he could turn the corner. That's why I was glad to see that he started out so well this year. And I thought in the spring he just kind of looked like a different guy. Looked like he had put on a little bit of weight. And I was really hoping that he would stay, but now you're seeing the same patterns that you have the last 2 years, and it's really bothersome. As an organization, they're going to be they're in a tough spot as well, because they have two guys, one Weaver, who I think is ready and has proven, if he's healthy, just like we had spoken earlier, if he's healthy, he's ready to go. And then Flaherty looks like he's taking the exact same path that Weaver did last year. So that's a couple guys that are barking at the door. And it's really going to force the organization to have to do something uncomfortable. And that's, unfortunately, that's a DL move is probably the path to least resistance in his situation. So, you know, I don't know. It is kind of frustrating, and I really feel bad for Walka.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. And you're right. I like him, and maybe he can be effective, but I don't think running him out there every 5 days right now is helping him any. And who knows? I mean, maybe that'll change. It looks like he'll miss the entire Orioles series, so he'll get a chance to face the Phillies again in Philadelphia. Maybe that'll be a good start. But after that, I'm trying to look at, I think it's the Nationals. No, it's not the Nationals after that. It's I can't read my calendar from here. But anyway, you know, I just don't feel like that's the best thing for the Cardinals right now. You know, something's going to have to happen, and probably pretty soon. Now, again, it may depend on what the Cardinals, the rest of the team does. I mean, if they continue to struggle, it doesn't hurt to leave him out there and see if he can get it, because you're not going anywhere anyway. Boy, like I said.
No, I was going to say, and that pattern just kind of sucks. Mm-hmm. You know, when you realize you're just like, okay, well, you're just going to have to take this one. Because that doesn't do anything for either side. And maybe not beneficial at all for Walka. So, I don't know. It's a tough spot. And then, you know, you realize that there is resources that can fill that spot eventually. So, it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. And, you know, he's done a lot of good work for the organization, but unfortunately the last 3 years have been a struggle for him.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've kind of beat on it, because, you know, again, a lot of these problems, excuse me, are the same problems we're talking about every week, just with some different numbers behind them. So let's go ahead and leave this week behind, and let's go talk about John Mozeliak and our trip to St. Louis and our middle segment, up the middle.
Alisaev, the second for one, the double play. What a double play by Ozzie Smith. Oh, mercy.
All right, Alan, it was your first trip to UCB weekend. What'd you think?
I was impressed. I was really, really impressed. It was just even the amenities and everything, I thought was really cool. They really treated you top notch and made you feel really welcome and made you proud to do what you do. You know, I thought that they were welcoming and very, everybody was a really cool deal. I was really blown away by it. As far as the Q&A goes, I'm a big Mozeliak guy anyway, and always have been. And I thought him being, he was just so frank and personal, and I was really surprised that he opened up with some of the things that he did, and even just like Kyle said in his segment, he answered questions that really weren't even asked. You know what I mean? He kind of went in a bunch of different directions, mapped out how they could go from here and there, and said some things that some of the agents of some of the players that he pointed out probably wouldn't like some of the things that he said. And I actually appreciated that a little bit. I kind of felt like, I was like, I don't think this is fodder for a newspaper or anything. I think that he's probably telling it like it is. I think there was probably a little bit of frustration from Friday, but he doesn't seem that to take that into account much. I think that he kind of, you know, shot from the hip, and it was refreshing to be in a room to do that.
Yeah, it's a typical Mo, and I will say you teased Kyle's segment there. We'll talk a little bit about that with Kyle as well here in just a few moments. But yeah, I think that Mo approaches our interactions, and he's done this now 7 times. We did the first one in 2011. He's been a part of every one of them. He approaches these interactions a little bit more candidly, maybe, than he does the press, a little bit more relaxed, because we've seen him. I mean, I've seen, you see him with Jim Hayes, and he's kind of joking around and stuff like that. But I think when you get him in the press conferences with Gould and Langosh and all that kind of stuff, you don't see a lot of that. It probably depends on the situation, but you don't see just a ton of that. And he's very relaxed, and but he doesn't tell you. I mean, he's talking to people that write, not for a living, but for the heck of it. And so he knows that whatever he says is gonna get out there somewhere or another. So he's not gonna tell us anything he doesn't want out there. But he does approach it in a different way than I think some of the main media does. And so it's fun. I mean, it always is. He'll answer pretty much anything. He may throw a little shade every once in a while at you when you ask the question, but not much, and not in a way that he's serious about it. I mean, he understands his audience. Let's put it that way. He understands who we're here. Let's talk about a few things that Mo said. Mo basically, and again, if you haven't read it, Colin Gardner put up a transcript of what Mo said up at the Redbird Daily. You can find it there. A lot of stuff about coaching. I mean, everything that he said. I think Colin must. I didn't realize he had a tape recorder with him, but obviously he transcribed it. Also wrote up something at my site that was more by memory. So. Either one of those, you look at though, you're going to have a pretty good feel for what we saw, what we heard. This was the first year that had him in the suite, so we were standing right there with Mo. I will say
pretty intimate. I was going to say it was pretty intimate.
Yeah, the only problem I had, and I will say my friend that went with me, he was in the other suite, and he said you couldn't hear much over there, and especially as the doors kept opening and closing, so there was a drawback there.
What?
But the other drawback was my back didn't like standing that long.
Well, as bad as this sounds, I did the same thing. I thought Mazalek was so good, but he was so long that when DeWitt got started, I was like, I need to go A, go check on Wyatt. B, I need to sit down for a second because my back was killing me from standing there that long. So I know exactly what you meant. And I do agree with you, buddy. It was hard to hear in there.
Yeah.
I didn't hear too much of the end of the DeWitt and on from there after I'd left the room.
Yeah, and so I do need to probably mention that to the Cardinal staff. Maybe they can set up some speakers or something. I don't know, but or try to lock that door because there was some distraction there, and then part of that was Bill DeWitt.
Yeah,
Bill DeWitt came in late. Yeah, and so we kept looking, expecting him. Mo said, hey, look, off season did not work, or has not worked yet. Let's put it that way. As I titled it, that John Mozeliak shouldn't go to the casino because he kept saying everything kept coming up craps. Everything they put the money on, whether it was Brett Cecil, whether it was Dexter Fowler, he even said, the idea that they were basing a little bit of, this idea of a slugger on Randall Grichuk, all this stuff isn't paying out the way they thought it would. It was interesting to hear him talk about Randall Grichuk that way when, the news reports were, Grichuk's imminent return. He's coming back any day now and he's going to start. And that's, it really didn't get that feeling from what Mo said to us. And I think it's been panned out by the fact that he's still in Memphis, and Tommy Pham is still starting.
Yeah, but after I really thought whenever last Friday when they promoted him to Memphis, I thought Grichuk would, if not be up for the doubleheader, definitely be up by this weekend at DH. And I thought that would be a way to get him out here to hit. Whenever I say some of the agents probably wouldn't have been too happy with what he said, Grichuk's could not have been happy with how Mazalek painted him. He kind of said the same thing about Carpenter when he made the comment, we don't feel like we have a true 3 or 4 in our organization right now. And he meant from top to bottom. And I was kind of surprised about that because right after it, he did say, he goes, well, because we thought we had one in Grichuk, and it doesn't look like that's going to pan out. And, you know, with Matt Carpenter, we see that he hasn't proven to fit into that spot. And I thought that was funny that he was so open about that. And I kind of thought that was kind of a clue to, hey, he may be throwing some clues out to what might happen, not necessarily this season, but maybe in the offseason. But yeah, it was funny. You know, Zach Gifford and I were talking about it afterwards to where, you know, he did not paint Grichuk in the best light. You know, he talked about, you know, he could do all these things if he would quit swinging and missing. And, you know, we all know that, but it's funny to come out of his mouth. It wasn't a, hey, we think that he's going to improve or whatnot. He didn't paint it in that light at all. So, so that was one of the things that really stuck out to me is how open he was toward a player still in the organization.
Yeah, I mean that's one of those things. It is interesting because you would easily see him say, "Well, we believe a lot in Grichuk and he'll be fine," and blah blah blah. And he didn't do that. I mean, he didn't blow smoke.
No.
And he did that. You know, he didn't try to sell you that Brett Cecil is going to be okay. He did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he talked about, you know, when Zach brought up some of the advanced stats with the spin rates and stuff like that, and you know, Mo feels like it's a mechanical issue that hopefully can be fixed in season because Cecil doesn't feel like he's hurt. You know,
yeah.
It's interesting that he didn't say he'll be fine. It's okay. We know it's bad, but he'll be fine. He said, hey, you know, this is, you know, we just got to figure this out.
Yeah, like, and he made the comment. He said, hey, sometimes you got to trust the guy. If he says he's not hurt, we got to trust that he's not hurt. So we think it's going to be something that can be improved upon and corrected during the season. And I thought that was kind of funny. That was the third guy that I was going to bring up that, you know, his management may not have liked that, you know, may not have liked him being that open about it, but he did, you know, you're exactly right. He did not blow smoke. He kind of went right at him. And, I think that what he said, I thought what Mo said altogether really made me feel better, and I thought it really echoed a lot of sentiments of, you know, Cardinals Twitter. You know, and he was right to where on Twitter you just get the 140 characters, it blows up, but you know, to us, you know, we're writing about it, we're passionate about it. Not saying the people post aren't, but I thought that he made me feel a lot better encompassing everything, and it made it sound like it's what you and I talking when we're not recording. Like, hey, man, this really sucks. I mean, you know, we did this and it didn't work, and you know, one of those. And I thought it was refreshing to hear it coming from who I think is the highest point that, you know, in the organization.
Yeah, just in passing, Randall Grichuk hitting .231 right now in Memphis in six games. Six games feels a little low. It feels like he may have missed one or two somewhere along the way. One homer, two RBI. Nine strikeouts, two walks. I mean, it really...
What's the strikeout total?
Yeah. Not nine in six games. I mean, it just doesn't feel like whatever he supposedly learned in Palm Beach doesn't seem like it's translated yet. So, we'll see. And I think we've got some...
Yeah, that's what I was worried about. I know that everybody was talking about things that he had done, and it was, it was not promising to see the strikeouts. That's my biggest concern.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, I think we've got some Twitter questions we may talk a little bit about Grichuk back then.
Okay.
Big thing, I think we kind of knew this, we kind of didn't know this. Alex Reyes was going to be in the bullpen this year, or at least to start the season. He was never going to be a starter in the rotation. You know, I think a lot of us, we knew that was a possibility. I think a lot of us just expected he would pitch well enough in spring that they would have to give him the starter spot to start with. But it's interesting to know that as much as and again, Reyes getting hurt early on kind of limited the talk. But even so, before then, they kind of left it. You know, it's kind of an open competition for the fifth spot. You know, I think that's kind of an indication that a lot of times those open competitions aren't open competitions.
You and I have talked about that at length.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody kind of knows that sometimes they are, sometimes it's just to get people fired up or inspired or get them to play as much as they can. You know, and that kind of goes back to Ozzie and Clayton. I mean, if you want to go that far back, there's some issues there when Tony Russo. But I just thought that was kind of interesting because I don't think we had ever heard him say so definitively that that's what Alex Reyes' role is going to be, and that probably means that that's what Alex Reyes' role is going to be next year. You know, until maybe even this part of the year next year, he's probably going to start in the bullpen again.
Yeah, I was surprised by that comment. Not that I thought that he would start. I think that you and I, in one of the early tapings in the year, I'd said if Walker throws it across the plate, he's probably going to win that spot. Mm-hmm. You know, that I felt like he had the benefit of the doubt. He was going to get the spot. But I never would have thought Reyes in the bullpen. I know everybody said that, but I really thought he'd go to Memphis, start every fifth day, and he'd be that sixth starter. That's kind of what I thought would happen. I thought it was interesting how he painted it. He even said, he goes, we wanted that power arm in the bullpen. And I go, well, this had been thought out, because that sounds a lot like the Carlos Martinez path. So I think you're right. I think we're probably going to see a lot of Reyes in the bullpen next year.
Yeah, and I mean, they're still, you know, limiting pitch counts, stuff like that. I mean, and that's kind of what we were thinking, that if he went into the rotation, if he started in the bullpen, it was because of that. It wasn't because he couldn't start. They just wanted to kind of hesitate on what he get going. In this discussion, and it went on into another one as well, it feels like there's still some, I don't want to say, I don't know, friction maybe? I don't know, I don't think friction's the right word. But, you know, Mo's talking about some of the advanced metrics that are here that they could use. And he says, I don't want to be that front office that sends down memo after memo after memo saying, take a look at this. These guys have to take accountability for themselves. He also talked about the 13 hitters versus 12 pitchers, and he, you know, adamantly said he preferred 13 hitters, but that the coaching staff has argued for the 13 pitchers, and he wants to give the coaching staff the tools that they have. You know, those two things, at least, and maybe a couple others if you kind of look it through it, it feels like, I don't know if I'd say they're not on the same page, they're not on the same paragraph. There's some differences there. There's more than we think. Because I think everybody kind of thinks that John Mozeliak put Mike Matheny in this position, and Mike Matheny is John Mozeliak's kind of puppet, and they're always going to agree because Mike wants to keep his job, and, you know, Mo picked him because Mike would agree with him, that kind of stuff. And that's not the case. I mean, there's still some differences there. And I don't know, obviously you're not serious enough yet, because Mike Matheny's still on top. But, I mean, do you think there could come a time where they'll get that serious?
Well, I agree that there may be a disconnect. I do, and I think that that's always a negative. But I thought that he may have just sold me. I don't know. But I thought he handled it really well, to where it was like, hey, this is how we do it. And it was the answer to your question. We have, you know, we huddle up, and sometimes we have one of our guys be the devil's advocate. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if that's not what it is. If it's just a round table and listen, in order for us to do this, all of us are going to have to give a little. And that's the way that I took it from him. He goes, hey, they made a convincing point about why they wanted 13. I would prefer to not do that, but they wanted to do it. They made a convincing point, and that's the way that we went. So I don't know if it's all bad that they're not on the same page. I know that sounds stupid, but I think that that may help the organization grow and the relationship grow. But I can see where that could become fractured as well really quick if it turns into a power struggle. Yeah. So you know, that I can see where you're going with that. But it almost, like I said, he may have sold me. I don't know. But I was kind of convinced that I was like, okay, well, that these differences, I think, are – can be healthy.
There is that. I mean, you're right. I did enjoy the fact that they specifically put somebody out, and I thought he was talking more front office, talking about, you know, signings, trades, things like that. And they always put somebody that says, okay, you tell us how dumb it is. You give us the other side of things. You fight for your point of view, and then we'll sleep on it. So, I mean, there does need to be a group thing. And he said, I have argued with Mike Matheny. I've argued with Bill DeWitt Jr., you know, the owner. You know, there have been arguments either way. That's just what we do. That's how we push each other. And that's, I mean, that's a good thing. Because I think it's very easy, as I was saying in the question, to say, you know, there's 20 years of the same owner. There's 20 years with two GMs, there's two managers, there's a lot of the same faces. Just easy to everybody get in a rut and everybody start thinking the same way. And so it's good to know that they're not doing that. But I don't know. I still feel like, you know, I feel like when we see the 13 hitters is better, when Mo sees that 13 hitter is better, when most of baseball sees that 13 hitters are better, and Mike Matheny says 13 pitchers are better, you know, I mean, again, it's not a huge deal, and obviously I agree with Mo. If the manager wants that, you give him that, if at all possible. But it still feels like, you know, how often, I guess, do you have to give the manager what he wants, even though you don't necessarily think it's best for the team, just because that's what the manager's comfortable with. You know, and it's what I've said. We've seen this. It's one of the arguments against Mike Matheny for the whole thing is, you know, Mo has to trade off players because Mike uses them too much. He has to, you know, give flexibility, and he has to take away flexibility, and he's always kind of working his roster, it feels like to us at least, around the manager. You know, how much do you do that? I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that he didn't paint them as on the same page and completely in lockstep. There's a lot of differences there.
Yeah, it was interesting. In that same conversation, if you remember, when he was talking about 13 pitchers, he did bring up Lilliquist as well. He said, you know, between Mike and Lilliquist, and he mentioned that, and I was like, well, is that softening the blow there a little bit, or does that mean, you know, that is more of a group discussion? So I kind of thought that was interesting that he included the, you know, the guy that should in essence should be running the pitching.
Of course, Kyle asked about Luis Robert, whatever we want to call him this week. Very interesting. You know, Mo said, I read a lot of articles, Conklin and the White Sox and how well they recruited. He said, we put a video together. And Ron Waterman, who was there, said it was even in Spanish. You know, and Mo said he was 0-for-2 with videos. I wonder who the other video was. You think it was David Price?
You know what? I kind of wish that somebody would have followed up with that. And I didn't want to get into the gossip portion of it, and that's why I didn't. But hindsight, I kind of wish I would have said something on that. He may not have told us.
Oh, he probably would have. I mean, it didn't matter because it was a person that didn't wind up coming here. So,
yeah.
But I just feel like it probably was Price because they didn't need to make one for Hayward. He'd been here.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Unless it was another one.
The one thing I did like.
Go ahead.
No, yeah, there's a little delay, sorry. But one thing I did like about his response to that is you could tell that he was a little burned up by what he had heard.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's kind of funny when you talk about that and about when Bill DeWitt came along and at least a couple times threw a couple of shots at Miami and their organization down there about, you know, how he said talking about, you know, value of a franchise versus cash flows, and he was like, well, you know, for Miami, it was basically infinite because the value there, which kind of made it, you know, there were no cash flows in Miami, basically, at least outside of MLB stuff. So, and then he was talking about, you know, kind of how garish the stadium was. I mean, again, it was referenced. He said it less than agreed with other people that said it, but it was kind of interesting to see that. So
you knew what their mindset was on those.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm skimming through Collins here to see if there's anything else that I thought it was very interesting. We'll talk a little bit about this, and then I'll let you wrap us up with anything maybe that you might found interesting. I thought it was interesting his ideas on Magnarius Sierra, and that basically he decided to bring up Sierra in part because the Padres had gone out and gotten Alan Cordoba off of the Cardinals for the Rule 5 draft, who was playing at a level below what Sierra was playing. I mean, he was playing rookie ball, basically, and they took him in the Rule 5. He's playing in the Major League Baseball and playing well. And Mo said, if they can do that, then why can't I bring up Sierra, who's, you know, at high A, and let him play? And I don't think Mo expected it's more the pitching and the defense and the base running versus the hitting. But it was very interesting to see that kind of shook Mo out of a little bit of a status quo too, to do a little bit more of a gamble because he'd seen other teams do it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, just like we talked about before, stepping out of the comfort zone. I thought that was really the insight that he gave on that situation in particular was the insight that I was hoping we would get, but honestly did not think we would. I didn't think he would be that open, because all the guys that are beating him up for letting Cordova go and look, hey, what a mistake. Well, he mapped out what happened and he admits, yeah, it was a mistake, but look, he's the first guy out of that league to go that was unprotected. He goes, we thought it would be safe. We knew there was a chance, but we thought it was safe. He said, and then when we realized that, hey, we lost him, if they're valuing him at that level, that's why we think we can bring up Sierra. Made a lot of sense. And I was like, okay, that answers so many things that you honestly wish kind of all of Cardinals Twitter was in that room, because that answered a lot of questions as far as that goes, as far as Sierra over Bader goes. It was just another reason why I was really impressed and glad and proud to be a part of that, because I thought those are things that I've always wanted to know, and he laid it out. And, you know, in his 2 minutes of talking on that, kind of made you regret ever saying, man, the Cordova deal kind of sucks. But, he mapped it out to where it's like, okay, well, that makes a ton of sense. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. And it just goes back into the 2017 Cardinals of, you know, nothing's going right. None of the gambles are paying off yet.
Yeah, it really does seem to be the big deal. Maybe the overriding thing for this season, that as much as you try, nothing is going right. So was there anything else out of that discussion that you really took something home from?
Well, he had mapped out the 4 to 6 weeks, and he kind of said that verbatim as he did on the press conference last Friday. But I thought that him keying on the fact that they don't have that middle of the order hitter were a lot of clues. I was like, well, that's, if they're in it, that's what they're going to go try to look for. If they're not in it, that's what they're going to look for in the offseason. So I think he gave a lot of clues that whether it's this year or whether it's in the offseason, this team's going to have a new look by 2018. And I don't necessarily call that a rebuild. And he was great about that as well, about how the teardown from the highest levels to the lowest levels, like the Cubs had to do and like Houston had to do. He said those are a thing of the past. He said, in Daniel, quote me, Eric, help me if I'm wrong here, but he kind of made it sound like 1 through 30, these players aren't that much difference. You know, you're in those draft picks, you can get the same value of player at 30 as you do at 1. He said it's just the going out and finding them and working them through your system. It's not like the tearing it down to where you can just get a bunch of ones and fives and feel that much better about it. I thought that was pretty enlightening as well.
Yeah, I mean, that was basically, it was like, you know, the number one pick's still going to be number one pick, but the difference between him and number 30 is a lot less than what it used to be last year. You know, and that's the idea about tanking, is that you get that, you know, one of those top five guys because they're just so much better and so awesome. The difference is just not worth, it's not worth destroying your team for that anymore. It probably depends on the year to some degree. I mean, they're, you know, and you think about past years with Strasburg, with Harper, with some of the other guys like that, that there seem to be no, you know, can't miss. Sure, that year it is, but, you know, you have to kind of have that in plan. You know, it's difficult to just all of a sudden just, you know, completely tank. That's got to be a process. And so you can't just do it because you see somebody coming up in the next year or two, I don't think. And he also talked about the fact that the international market is changing, the way things are going. So that's the way other things people would do. You tell you can get that, plus you also go out and get, you know, quality people on the international market. They can't do that anymore, at least not to that extent. There's a lot of rules changing. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. And it's right. I mean, that's never going to happen in St. Louis anyway. I mean, the most we can see is kind of like what you and I talked about, you know, this year. You know, selling Lance Lynn, selling, you know, O or Rosenthal, somebody, you know, some stuff that's going to be coming off the books anyway. Why, you know, that they might do, but they're not going to do a full hard, you know, stripping it down and try to be bad. They're going to be doing exactly what, you know, what they normally do.
Yeah, I think that any move they make, they're going to try to improve 2017 as well. Yeah, I hope that makes sense. You know,
I think so to some degree, or at least I don't think anybody, given the way things have gone, things are, I don't think anybody would worry too much if they could get a really quality, I mean, a really quality prospect or two for Lance Lynn. I don't think anybody's going to have a problem with that. I mean, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need that. There's some of that they need.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't got the big name guys. And part of that, you know, they didn't get Robert and things like that. And so they need some. I mean, because that's what Mo said. Like, and you referenced it. You know, there is no big slugger coming. You know, Harrison Bader may be the top hitting prospect that the team has, but he's not going to be that slugger. You know, Delvin Perez. You
exactly.
Know, hey, maybe.
I thought that.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm completely agreeing with you. I was just going to interject and just say that I thought that was a really good insight on Bader, on the outlook for Bader, is that he made it clear that we just don't have that. And I was like, well, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe Delvin Perez is, but he's, you know, 4 or 5 years away, and, you know, there's still a lot of ifs with him. There's just not that there. And
yeah, so, there's going to be kids' gloves on that one.
Right, right. And so they're just going to have to be, well, like you said, if you can't develop them, you sign them or you trade them for them. And he's going to have to – he realizes that's a problem, and they're going to have to do something. All right, unless you've got something else, do you have anything else on that?
No, I'm good. I think we covered quite a bit.
Yeah, and again, Colin's got a pretty good transcript. I'm not sure it's 100%, but it's pretty close. There's a few. I was reading through it now. There's a few things that I remember that I don't remember seeing on here. Maybe one other thing we will touch on real quick before we leave, because it's something that I don't think's on Colin's, and I definitely forgot to write it on mine. There was that idea. Somebody asked about Jose Oquindo and about Oquindo being gone and the tie to the defense. And John Mozeliak said, you know, last year I denied it. I said there's not that link. There's not. But he said I would have to, looking at the last year and the way this year is, he feels like that there may be a connection more than he thought there was. I guess let's put it that way. That Oquindo's, and again, he pointed out, he did not run Oquindo off. Oquindo wanted to do this. He wanted to make this change. And so... I thought that was interesting, that because I think it'd be very easy, and I think to continue to say there's no real connection between Oquindo being gone and the defense kind of going downhill. But, you know, he was frank and said, look, I mean, when you see it for a year and a year and a half now, it's kind of, I mean, maybe there's not a connection, but it's kind of like Matt Carpenter hitting the leadoff spot. Maybe there is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was interesting, especially, you know, when it was brought up with Presser that it just wasn't the right time. And then when Danny Mac on the broadcast last Friday night made the comment of it just didn't work out family-wise. Well, it makes me wonder if they're not really going to push in maybe be the bench coach next year or vice versa. I don't know. The knee situation, I think, may result in him not being able to coach third. That's the way that I kind of took it. Because he had to go in, you know, multiple times on the same one. That could be problems. But you could tell that there's a lot more smoke to this. And then what Mo said, I thought, okay, then there definitely was a pretty heavy conversation that was had. And I don't know where that goes, you know. But that, like I said, I know there's a Twitter question here in a little while. It just seems like the pro Matheny guys in the dugout are shrinking.
Yeah, there is definitely something that I feel like, and again, maybe, I don't know, and maybe it's just the stuff that they've told us, but I feel like Oquindo, I mean, one, he's kind of given up on managing, which is at his age and things, which is fine. And I think he really enjoys teaching baseball. And so,
sure,
at that regard, he's in a great place down around Jupiter to do that. I mean, I'm sure that he enjoys the big leagues, but it's kind of like George Kissel was, and I've always thought that. Yeah, Akindo was the Kissel of our time. Kissel came up and did a little bit, but then he went back to the minors to teach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that, you know, hopefully, I hope it's just the best situation for Akindo. But you're right. It was intriguing that to hear those comments, because you're just like, okay, these conversations have been had. So yeah, you know, I don't know. I'm kind of a Shilt fan, just because, and I know that he's from the Kissel regime as well. You know, that's and he's highly thought of in the organization. So if you can just compound it, take care of a lot of these problems, and if it were Okendo and Shilt that could do it, I'm all for it.
All righty, well, let's go ahead now and let's talk to Kyle with our futures report.
0-1 to Pujols. In the air, left field, and Pujols has given St. Louis the lead. A dramatic, towering three-run home run. Stunned in disbelief here in Houston.
And we're joined by Kyle Reese from the Redbird Daily for his minor league information. But before we get into that, Kyle, we had a chance to actually meet face-to-face on Sunday with or Saturday and Sunday with the blogger event. What was your takeaway from that time with Mo and with everybody else?
Daniel, that was one of the most fun times I've had, especially on Sunday, at the stadium in a really long time. That it was just a great, you know, the Q&A with Mo was fantastic. He was forthright. He gave a lot more information than I think we all kind of expected, and he was answering questions that we weren't even asking while answering questions that we were asking, which was incredible. Good food, good drinks, great people. Getting a chance to meet some of the other bloggers was an amazing like sit down. Getting to talk to you was great. Getting to meet you was incredible. Again, the Redbird Daily staff is they are a pleasure to be around. And getting to meet Colin Gardner and Adam Butler and Alan Medlock and Rusty Gropel, like I couldn't be any more. What they put out is great, but getting to know them and knowing that I'm on a staff with such great people is a really, really cool thing. And honestly, it was just a great, amazing experience, and I loved it, man. I've been talking about it all week.
I've told some of the others that this was a real changing of the guard type of event, because there were some that were older that had been there a few more times, but there were a lot of people doing it for the first time, and so it's fun to get the reaction of those that haven't been through it before. Because, yeah, Mo is a guy that will tell you a lot. It tells you in a pretty humorous way, too. I mean, he's a dry humor. He has no problems busting on us as well, which is fine. We throw enough shots at him. It's probably fair he throws a few back at us.
Yeah. No, it was awesome. Just the way he interacts with everyone, and he does listen to us. That came across so strongly. You know, he mentioned the Two Sisters blog or the podcast that they do.
Right.
You know, he kind of alluded, and that's an incredible feeling. You know, it's exhilarating, even if he's not listening or reading, to know that he at least has an ear out for what might sound good or what might sound bad. You know, he connects with us, and that goes a long way.
Yeah, and I think he said it, that, you know, it's kind of his way of looking at what, I hate to pat ourselves too much on the back, but intelligent, thoughtful fans are thinking. Because, like he said, Twitter, you throw in stuff out at 140 characters, you can get really emotional and passionate and stuff, but if you put it down in the blog, you've got to think it out, and you've got to, you know, give some reasons behind it. And that's a good thing. I think that gives him a chance to know, you know, if the bloggers are screaming, then it's a chance that everybody's miserable, and maybe there is something that needs to be done.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting time, fun time. We had a great time. Then, you know, in your line of work, if you will, when it comes to blogging, the draft came around this week, and obviously the Cardinals didn't have picks in the first round, but, you know, after that, those first two or three rounds got passed, they were right in the mix of things, too. Your thoughts about what the Cardinals did this week with the new people they picked?
What I like most about the draft, and, you know, you spend a lot of time thinking about it, they took a lot of players well, as we all know at this point, they took a lot of college seniors. And, of course, they did that so that they could leverage them as they allocate their funds. Obviously, college seniors don't have a lot of leverage when it comes to negotiating a contract, because it's either you sign with the team that drafted you or you go play independent baseball or you don't do anything at all. So, you know, they'll get a lot of easy signings. Their fourth-round pick, Kramer Robertson out of LSU, is a good example of that. He played shortstop at LSU. He was the successor to Alex Bregman, and he was a senior. He's going to cost next to nothing, and he's a really quality, like, organizational depth piece. But, you know, they didn't really take very many risks. They did their due diligence, as Mo would say. They took 16 college seniors out of 38 picks. They took 20, you know, 20 of those, 20 of their 38 picks were collegiate pitchers, which is really interesting to me. There aren't too many, you know, only two high school pitchers was interesting. All of this, as I ramble on, is just to say that what they did, in my opinion, is they just said, all right, these are the guys that we can sign. We know we can sign them. We know that we can sign them at slot or below slot. And then they looked at, in my mind, what are three or four different people and said, these are high upside guys with real raw tools. And with that extra money, we are going to do everything we can to get those guys. And I'm excited about it because I think two of those guys in particular, Zach Jackson, who is a catcher, but will probably be a first baseman. And, of course, at this point, everyone knows his name, I'm sure, who follows the Cardinals. Terry Fuller, whose real first name is Terriez, which is a really cool-sounding name. I guess I've got this thing about cool-sounding, not knowing how to pronounce people's names. But
yay.
Yeah, exactly. That's fine. Mo's going to mispronounce it anyway. So, but yeah, so they're going to have a chance to sign these high upside, raw talented kids and probably do a pretty good job of their 38 picks, probably signing somewhere in between 30 and 35 of them would be my guess. So I like what they did. It isn't exactly flashy. It isn't exactly ultra exciting, but there are a couple pieces in there that are going to be a lot of fun to keep an eye on.
Besides the signability factor, do you think that maybe this was their way of minimizing that hole? Because there was that idea that with the not having any kind of pick in the first couple of rounds, that the talent from this year was going to be low, and then there might be, you know, moving through the system, there was always going to be this gap. If they get college people that are closer to their ceiling, does that limit that?
Yeah, you nailed that. You have a really good feel for that, Daniel. Scott Hurst, who was our first pick out of Cal State Fullerton, he's a perfect example of that. You know, this time next year, I wouldn't be surprised if he's at AA already. He's just, he has a good eye. He has a really solid, quick inside-out swing. He generated power for the first time in his career after being injured early on this season. So he might have a little bit more power than I'm giving him credit for, but he has the hit technique to advance through the lower levels pretty quickly. Like, I'd imagine he'll start off at he'll probably start off at Johnson City. I don't think he'll stay at Johnson City very long, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's ending the season in Peoria and doing pretty well if they're on a playoff run. But yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. They took a bunch of players. The one thing that I really liked about some of the seniors that they took, especially the arms, two in a row in their ninth and tenth round pick, Evan Kuczynski and Brett Seeberger. They're two guys, left-handed pitchers, big left-handed pitchers. I believe Kuczynski is 6'5" and Seeberger is 6'2". They had really, really good junior years and weren't drafted where they wanted to or weren't drafted and went back for their senior year and struggled and probably cost themselves some money in the process. But they're high upside guys that you're just looking to rebound, to find those little mechanical glitches that they might be doing wrong or correct their shoulder or elbow surgeries that they might get along the way to really re-unlock, to reopen, rather, their potential. So, yes, I think you're dead on. I think they have a lot of guys who they'll be able to fill in, like, next year at Peoria and maximize their talent and fill that hole.
It should be fun to watch, and like you said, hopefully everybody signs. You think that they're going to be able to sign, especially, I guess, Fuller is probably the one that everybody's going to focus on, and being that he is a high school kid, he still has that leverage of college. I mean, what are the odds of getting him, do you think?
You know, at first, so I ended up making, okay, so I took off work on Tuesday because I hadn't spent any time, like very little time, not any time, but I had spent very little time studying the draft like I normally do. So coach of the league team, we had a little game on Monday. I stayed up all night Monday into Tuesday for round two, watched all of round two. And this Terry Fuller was one of the kids that I gravitated to at about 3 o'clock in the morning at 2 o'clock on Tuesday morning. And his story is incredible. He and there aren't a lot of details about it, but he grew up in a tough home, and I get the impression that maybe a family member kind of took him out of that home and tried, like, raised him really well, but he had a really tough upbringing. And he's a monster of a kid. He's 240, 6'4", and I mean, at this point, everyone knows he's been offered to play at Alabama as a defensive end. And when you listen to the kid talk, you can tell he loves baseball. And he's a really, really interesting. You can tell he's a sweet kid. Like, he's really interesting. But he's also really, really excited. And, you know, he has not been bashful about saying, no, I'm going to sign with the Cardinals. This is what I'm going to do. Mm. And, you know, I think back to, you know, Carson Kelly a handful of years ago. He said the same thing and signed relatively quickly. Rob Kaminsky, the same thing happened there. Both of those guys were early picks who were thought to be maybe difficult signings. But, you know, usually if a kid says, I'm going to do it, they end up doing it, you know. It, the difference between, of course, like a kid going into college and giving a verbal commitment and doing this with the majors before they sign is that you're going to get paid. So it's not like a verbal commitment where he's going to flop his verbal commitment and go from Alabama to Auburn. He's going to get paid, and he's going to love getting paid, and he's going to love playing baseball. And so I think Fuller's good. I'm not as high on Jackson. I think there's a small chance that Jackson doesn't sign, but I think what the Cardinals are going to probably do is go heavy at Fuller, go heavy at Jackson, and then the pitcher out of Carlos Beltran's baseball academy, that Wilberto Rivera. I'd imagine that he ends up getting a little bit of a kick from his slot as well.
The deadline, is that July 15th now?
That's it. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so they've got a month. Because I noticed a lot of those, not for the Cardinals, but for some other teams, a number of those college players have already announced that they're going back to school or high school coach, they're going to their college. They haven't didn't waste any time doing that. Not for the Cardinals, but so I figured the deadline was pretty close to that. Well, hopefully they can, and hopefully this strategy of you know, gaming this system, and I don't say that because it's really the way that everybody does it, trying to do that. But hopefully it will pay off. Let's talk about the Cardinals that are already in that minor league system. It's been another week. What have you seen as you're getting ready to write your weekly column for the Redbird Daily? What are you seeing out there?
You know, it's been a good week for a lot of the guys that you would anticipate being very good. And that's, to me, that's a good sign. In the last couple weeks, it's been, you know, guys like Anthony Garcia have had a couple good weeks, and that's fine or fun or whatever. You want your guys playing well, but it doesn't do anything for the organization necessarily if Anthony Garcia is your best hitter at Springfield. And it was the opposite of that this week. You know, Luke Vogt was he's back to hitting for power. He slumped, and now he seems to have it all right back together, which, you know, you and I have talked about is something that we were really, really anxious to see how that was all going to play out, and it's playing out the way that you would hope for it to turn out. Not striking out. I think he only struck out once so far this week. And then, you know, the pitching, there is one, Mayers has had a really, really solid couple starts here. Not great. And we were talking in a direct message on Twitter, the Redbird Daily staff, we were talking, and Alan Medlock asked, who do you think the first bullpen arm will be if the Cardinals needed a bullpen arm? And my first reaction was to say Mark Montgomery, who is a free agent signee, a minor league free agent signee out of the Yankee system, just because he's having a really good season. But, you know, I look at it, and the Cardinals have starting pitching depth, so if they were to call Mayers up and use him out of the bullpen where his fastball could play up a little bit and he wouldn't be as exposed, I wouldn't be surprised if that's the move they make. But yeah, it's been a good week. Andy Young. Speaking of the draft, last year with the 37th pick, the Cardinals took Andy Young. And Andy Young, nobody really knew anything about. He was kind of dismissed. And he was pretty well dismissed at the beginning of the season, too. But he's out of Indiana State, and he's a 6 foot 195 middle infielder, third baseman, and he is raking in the Midwest League for Peoria. He has 11 home runs, which is the most the team has had before the All-Star break since Josh Vitters in, I don't even remember, like 2006 or 2008. He has changed his approach. He's only struck out 9 times in his last 10 games. He's hitting home runs. He's hitting doubles. He's hitting singles. He's driving in runs. He's right in the middle of that lineup. And he keeps doing it. He doesn't show any signs of fading. And it's really exciting to watch him. I only really get to listen to him and then get some scouting reports from some people who live down there. But to like listen to how excited the broadcast is about him and to read some of the local writers about him. He has a chance to be a really, really surprising prospect as he goes through the system. And then the other thing that I do want to talk about with Peoria is, you know, Matt Adams has really been hammering the ball for the Braves, and the kid that they got from Matt Adams was Juan Yepes, and Juan Yepes has had a really, really good introduction to the Cardinals system. He had only had 1 home run in 2 months before entering the Cardinals system. He just hit his 5th tonight as a member of the Cardinals, so 6th total, and he's playing a really solid third base. So Peoria, which really struggled at the beginning of the year, has finally started to come around, and they're eliminated from the first half playoff, and of course they have a second half that'll start anew, but they're ending the season strong, and that's a really, really good thing. So it's pretty much been business as usual in the minor leagues. Rosarena's doing well. Mercado's doing well. All the guys you ask about, Bader is doing extraordinary. They're all doing exactly what you would hope and what you need them to. So good week.
Yeah, you got to like that. Somebody should have one.
Yeah. Oh God.
I don't think we've had a chance to talk, at least not on the show, since this happened. But what do you think was the rationale between Chad Huffman getting the call instead of Luke Voit back about a week or so ago?
I cannot make heads or tails of it. Part of me wonders if it's about maintaining his trade value. If you think that you can trade him, you're afraid that he comes up and gets exposed. I think it's probably more simple than that. It's just you don't want to deprive that kid of at-bats. And he was struggling a little bit at the time. He was starting to come out of it. He's 26. He's a little older, but he's still in his first season at AAA. It's not like he's repeating Memphis. And it just makes sense to get him the at-bats. I'm excited. I want to. So that's the thing about Chad Huffman, right? There's nothing exciting about Chad Huffman. Nothing at all. And we've seen when Mags got called up what that infusion of excitement, not even age, because Luke is 26 years old, but that new excitement can bring. I don't fully understand it, but I definitely think it has a lot to do with just the regular at-bats.
It could be, although as we're talking here, I realize that Chad Huffman and of course Matt Carpenter are good friends, and ever since Chad Huffman has been up, Matt Carpenter's been hitting. So maybe
that's a great point.
Not this leadoff thing. It's maybe is you've got to have Chad Huffman sitting around spurring on Matt Carpenter. I don't know.
A little cheerleader. Got to call up that cheerleader for Matt Carpenter.
I guess it's as good a reason as any. But all right. Well, it sounds like it's a good week. And hopefully, I noticed, and we'll end on this. I noticed that tonight Sandy Alcantara was pitching a very, very solid game for Springfield, it looked like. We talked about that with Mo this week. He talked about making sure they get his breaking stuff, maybe even requiring him to lead off every at bat with a breaking pitch. Do you think they'll go that route?
Oh man, so it's really interesting. I've tweeted about it a lot, and I guess I didn't quite realize it even watching the games, but You know, you could tell that he was struggling to get ahead in counts. And it did seem like, you know, I definitely get what Mo was saying about, you know, having him use his pitches in all counts, having him get more comfortable. But I don't necessarily know if that's exactly 100% true with Sandy. I mean, I feel like he was having a lot of trouble locating his fastball early on in counts, you know, on an 0-0 count to start. I would think that he just had his third solid start in a row tonight. But he's not striking anyone out, which is interesting. You know, he's always been a K inning guy, a K plus an inning guy. And I'm going to try to do the math really quick in my head. In the last 17 innings over his last three starts, he's K'd 9, which, you know, that's a really low number for him. So I think it'll be a little bit before we see him. I would imagine I'll need to get those K numbers up and adjust how he throws, you know, before he gets called. But I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, by the end of what is today, June 15th, we're recording this on Thursday. If by the end of June, if he has two more starts and they've been lights out and he's starting to ramp up those Ks, if Memphis needs a starter or if the Cardinals need say Rosenthal gets hurt or O gets put on the DL mysteriously because he's letting up home runs, I wouldn't be surprised if it was him. I think that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on as we end June.
Yeah, like I said, Mo has been in his corner quite a bit this year, from all the way back from spring training. So, and he's the one that makes the moves.
Yeah, he likes to use that molded. He always uses molded out of clay. If you were going Sandy Alcantara molded out of clay, like it's just he always Sandy Alcantara is the perfect physical specimen for a pitcher in Mr. Mozeliak's eyes.
Yeah, and you wonder sometimes too. I mean, how this organization wants to recapture what Rick Ankiel could have been. You know, and I know it's a completely different situation, but to have that, you know, always maybe looking for that ideal, whether it's there or not, we'll have to wait and see. Yeah. Kyle, I appreciate it, and we'll talk again next week.
Daniel, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, again, I appreciate Kyle joining us and giving us a little minor leagues talk. Alan, I mean, I guess it's kind of interesting to see what they did in the draft. We got a Twitter question about that. But since Kyle talked, you know, he talked about Terry Fuller there. It sounds like he's going to sign. He's already headed down to Jupiter headed down to Florida to sign. So that's good. Cardinals signed at least one of their pitchers for like $3,000, which was like, you know, $120,000 below slot. Which is great for them because they get to use that money other places, I think. It's kind of weird to not really pay that much attention to the draft this year with no first round picks, but Cardinals seem to have made the best of what they could do.
Sure, I agree with that. I was really counting on Kyle for a lot of my information just because I didn't pay much attention to it this year. You know, I followed some of the names. I'd go and research a little bit, but he seems to think they did pretty well. And I like how he had kind of told me off the record. He was like, he had read a deal to where they weren't ultimately concerned with the draft this year or the sanctions by it kind of going in hand in hand with what Mozeliak said about the, you know, the 1-30 guys. He said that you could find guys if you dig hard enough. And, you know, that's Kyle made it sound like they made the most of what they could do.
Yeah, I think so. You know, hopefully the gap will not be that big. You know, again, I know when the first came out, we kind of felt like this would be kind of a lost year in development. But they did sign a lot, or they're going to, you know, drafted a lot of guys that are ready to go. So it limits them from taking some gambles on high upside people probably, but how many of those do you see after the first three rounds anyway? So I don't know. All right, well, let's go ahead then and get into our last segment, Swinging Away.
Tying run at second base. In the air to right center. This game is tied. Going to third is Pujols. And it's 9-9.
They just won't go away.
And we will talk about some Twitter questions from our Twitter followers. We appreciate all of them. You can always, even when we don't ask for them, send us a question. Again, mine at C70 and Alan's at AMedlock1. We also have Meet Me at Mutual, but if you send it just to that, it may not get seen. You got to hit one of us up with it, and we can bring it to the show next week. But Ben Adams, who again, I think all this week are our regular contributors, but Ben Adams, the P-Vine on Twitter, asks if we needed that many pitchers in the draft. What do you think? Did we need that many pitchers?
You know what? I think that they're always going to build from pitching, or build with pitching, and yeah, they've made that clear from the from day one in the organization that they're a pitching heavy organization, and I think that they're just probably that's where I think that they're going to improve, is just getting as much as they can and finding the diamond in the rough. But they seem to be pretty convinced, so I can't argue with their with the mentality. You know, it seemed to have worked, and I kind of see where he's going, that you maybe waste some picks to find one of those bats or premier guys. But you know what? That's just kind of been the way the organization's always been, and I can't really complain about it.
You know, my philosophy has always been you sign as many pitchers as you can, and then you trade some of them off for hitting. Because everybody always needs pitching. And if you get more of it than anybody else, then you've got, you know, upper hand when it comes to dealing. I also think that, you know, they wanted a lot of seniors because of, you know, the money situation and stuff like that. A lot of those kind of guys are going to be pitchers. You know, and I mean, it is. It's one of those things that for one reason or another, the Cardinals aren't developing hitters, and maybe that's a philosophy of the organization that needs to be looked at about why they're not. But until they can figure out how to develop them, they might as well stick with what they're good at, and then, you know, if they develop a whole bunch of pitchers, hopefully you can trade off some, you know, maybe either trade off some of these guys or trade off some guys like, you know, well, heck, Weaver, Al Contrera, you know, whoever, knowing that there's a replacement coming. But I just feel like that's really what they're going after right there.
Yeah, I thought Kyle made a great point on the Cedar pitching as far as the leverage. I never thought about that. You know, having the signing leverage on some of those guys. That had never crossed my mind. I thought he made a great point on that.
Yeah. All right. Scott, Texas Card Fan 1, with his normal, everyday, upbeat question. At what point do you pee on the fire and call on the dogs and realize this is not a postseason club? Asking for a friend. Asking for a lot of people. I think a lot of people have that idea, and I think it's one thing we've kind of discussed before. You know, I don't know. I don't know where you're at. As the Cardinals, you know, like I said, they wasted this week. They're back 4.5. They're 3 games ahead. Pittsburgh is playing a little bit better, so, I mean, there's 2 teams ahead of them. Pittsburgh could pass them. It feels to me, I don't want to write them off, because 4.5 in June seems kind of silly to write off. But on the other hand, if you told me to put down odds today on whether they were going to be a playoff team, I think it would be like, you know, a 20% chance that they would be. I just don't know that this is a team that's worth investing in.
No, I agree with that. And I mean, you could probably get the organization to tell you that. But I don't know. What's the end game on that if we were to say that they're not going to make the playoffs right now? It's not going to change. I mean, we're still going to ride out that month until the trade deadline and start calling some teams going, hey, we'd entertain offers on a premier starting pitcher for a stretch run. You know, that's what it would be. I don't think anybody's going to say, okay, we're done right now, and then just start dumping guys off, because, just like I said, that's not the way that the organization runs. So, you know, they should be 10.5 out right now. You know, we're lucky that the division is not that good. And you never know. I mean, you could catch fire. I don't think there'll have to be some things that change. And, you know, one of the smallest things, they just got to start winning some series. if they would start winning some series and not having to win 7 out of 10 or you know, 10 out of 12 to do that to make a run, they'll probably be more into this than we'll give them credit. But, you know, they just don't – they're just so dysfunctional that they only play well for about 3 or 4 game stretches and then shoot themselves in the foot for the next 4 or 5. So that's why you're under below 500 team right now. But, no, like I said, I mean, everything but my heart wants to say not to start dumping some of those pieces. But after the Milwaukee series, I'm thinking, well, I think Milwaukee may be better. And that's what kind of concerned me because I don't think their pitching is that good. So, but then you have tonight, and that's how things are with me right now. It's so 50-50 from night to night that, you know, like you had a great point. You know, they score these 11 runs tonight and put it on a power display and make it shut out tomorrow. So they're just so tough to read. But just to answer the question, I think it's a little premature to blow things up.
I will say, and it's not that far away, but I will say if they're at under 500 on the 4th of July, I think you can probably toss it, honestly. Because I just, well, I mean, even if they're a couple of games out, which would be pretty surprising, but, you know, if you're under 500, right, you know, and you're getting to the All-Star break, I'm sure there's teams that have done that, that have come back and made it into the playoffs at that rate. Can't be many. I just feel like that's a fairly safe. And again, honestly, if you wanted to do it right now, I don't think I'd blame you. But at 4.5, and there's still chances, but I still feel like this team under 500 in July, I mean, you're getting real close to the halfway point there at the 4th. It's just very hard for me to believe that no matter where they are in the division, that a sub 500 team on the 4th is going to make it into the playoffs.
Sure. I think that if you can win this series this weekend, which got a good start, and you can go in and take 3 or 4 from Philadelphia, you probably feel a lot better about yourself. But I think that you're right. I think that most of the time I never really pay attention to the standings till around Flag Day. You know, that's I kind of see where they are. I'm not seeing where everybody else is. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm just now really starting to turn it over and to really delve into it a little bit. What really worries me is I do think the Cubs are probably going to start playing better. I'm pleasantly surprised that they haven't yet. The team that really concerns me is that the Pirates have kept their head above water enough to where they're within a month now of getting Marte back. They may be in striking distance. So that may be one of the teams that you really need to start looking over your shoulder for. It's going to be a dogfight. I think you're probably going to have to come out of the division, but that may be their easiest route, the easiest route anyway. So I keep thinking that Colorado and Arizona do come back to the pack a little bit. I think the Dodgers probably win that division pretty easy. But I say that, and, you know, week to week, they're still around. So I don't know. But I think it's a little premature, but you're right. We are getting there. But I still don't think that other than a few of those pieces, you know, I don't think there's going to be an all-out go for it. And I don't think there's going to be an all-out get rid of all the pieces that they have. By the trade deadline, I don't think the team is going to look ultimately that much different.
And that's fair. I really can't see without, you know, yeah, winning this series, sweeping the Phillies maybe, that 3-game set, and then maybe beating up on Pittsburgh. If you can go through these next 3 series and then that extra makeup game with the Reds, so that's 10 games. If you can win 8 of them, maybe there's a different story, but you know, maybe that's when they'll start thinking about investing in this team. But I think even splitting those at 5 and 5, it doesn't do you any good, because these are games that you really need to win. So yeah, if they don't go 8-10 over this time, if you're looking at a week from Monday and they're just kind of treading water, then you get into the Diamondbacks, then you get into the Nationals, then you get into some teams that are got a chance of hurting you.
I'd forgotten about the off day on Monday. I thought it was a 4-game in Philadelphia, which makes me feel a little bit better because I think that's a little bit easier to go in and win both those series.
Yeah. got a few here. The rest of ours come from Cassie, which is Pink Daisy 08. Her first question is, how much influence do you think Badaska is allowed to have? Do you think this is just a show by the front office, since it is temporary? Now, I will say, I was listening to, I mentioned earlier, Derek Gould and Benjamin Hawk, but I haven't gotten very far into their most recent show. But I did hear that, you know, they talked about the fact that Bill Mueller did ask for a leave of absence. This was not a euphemism. This was not a situation where the Cubs kind of suggested that he had. Apparently, he is dealing with some sort of family issue, whatever it may be, and that's not our business, so it doesn't really matter. But that when he is ready to return, he will have a spot. So that I guess it's possible John Mabry wouldn't, but it seems unlikely. And we have Cassie's asking about Mabry here in a minute. We'll get to that. But yeah, I don't think that they would bring up a guy if he's not allowed to. You know, I mean, he's the assistant, so he's always going to be substandard to, or not substandard, but, you know, mm-hmm. secondary to what Mabry's doing and how Mabry wants to go about things. But Daska's got a pretty good reputation. I think they want him up here to work with these guys as best he can.
Sure, I didn't feel like this was a filler role. I thought they went to get somebody to help. I think that all of this, whether they say it or not, was a shot at Matheny and Mabry a little bit. And I think that was probably said behind closed doors too. I bet it was a little more testy than we assume in those meetings last week. But, I think that that's what it was. And I think he's up here to help, and I think he will. I always wonder about this though, how much you can tell, you know, coaching wise. I don't know. I think that there's the mindset and all that, but how much has McGuire? I don't know. I haven't looked at I don't look at the Padres stats or anything like that, but how much has he helped those offenses? You know, I don't know. I still think it's the players that perform and some of these guys probably lose their jobs when they shouldn't and maybe get credit when they shouldn't either.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that because you just don't, you don't know. I mean, that said, the offense has looked a lot better this last week. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, whether that's coincidental, whether that's the fact that they played the Phillies and the Brewers, if the Brewers have a weak spot, it's their pitching, and the Orioles. I mean, some of that is who they're playing, but maybe getting a different voice in there did help. I mean, who knows? I don't know for sure. I do think that it's easy, like you said, it's pretty easy to give a lot of credit to coaches. It's pretty easy to put a lot of blame on coaches and managers to that degree. Whereas we don't really necessarily know how much relevance they actually have.
Yeah.
Cassie's next question is, the new third base coach, which would be Mike Shildt, seems to be making a difference. Do you think he'll be able to help Dex and Steven figure things out? Mike Shildt's been there all year. I mean, and he was the quality control coach, but he was also, I feel like that was a little bit of the Pop Warner role that we've got right now, which is basically if you see something you can help with it. So my feeling is that at least when it comes to Mike Shildt, I don't think he's going to have a whole lot of impact on Dexter Fowler and Stephen Piscotty. I think that's going to be Mabry and Badaska from the hitting side of things. I mean, you know, Shildt is involved with the outfielders, so if Case is here talking about their fielding, maybe. But I don't think that that's going to, like we said, I just don't see that that's going to make a big impact as well.
No, I'm a big Shildt guy, though, and I'm not saying. But in the same vein that we just talked about, I still think the players perform. Now, Zach did put something out that was pretty interesting this week about how he's having them play more shallow, back to where Fowler played a lot last year, and he said that the routes had improved, just going by the way that he had adjusted things. Now he is a Kissel descendant, essentially. You know, he does all his coaching from the George Kissel books. I guess he was friends with Kissel's son, who was a doctor in the organization, and they really got to know each other really well, and that's kind of why Shildt is held in such high regard, as Kissel held in such high regard. So, you know, he coming up through the organization, like, he was really good at Springfield and really good at Memphis. And I think that you know, you have the right guy in place that can help. Now, whether I don't know. There needs to be more data on that that would follow to show that, you know, success kind of follows the guys around, because I really just don't know how much difference it makes. I think it's the mindset of the player more than anything.
Yeah, and I will say, as you were talking about all that, I did look it up. If you have a chance to read the book by Rob Raines last year, Taking Flight, which came out kind of soon after Howard McGall's book on the Cardinal Way, both books kind of address that idea of how the Cardinals do things just in a different way. And Rob Raines did it by talking to having basically chapters on different players and coaches, and Mike Shildt is one of them. In fact, he's the third one in here right after John Mozeliak and Mark Dijon, and it talks about, you know, the book that he has from Kissel and things of that nature. So if you're interested in Shildt and some of where he comes from, I would definitely consider, you know, picking that book up on Amazon or at the library or whatever. Pretty good book all the way around. But there's some interesting things in there that you might find that would work. But yeah, I don't know that it's going to be that much of an impact. You know, we'll have to see. But I feel like anything is difficult to make. You could make some adjustments in season, but it's difficult to make huge adjustments.
Exactly. And you know what? I don't think this was a position to bring up Badaska to improve the hitting in order to move Shildt over there because he's the better third base coach. This isn't going to make complete sense. I think it was to show that no one's safe. I think that it's to show that we needed to shake up, and this is how we're going to do it. We think that these roles are going to be more fitting, and they're going to be more fluid. I don't think it was because he's a better third base coach, or they would have made the move earlier. But you know, I think it was more of a shakeup. You don't see the coaching changes like that in town or in the organization or in baseball much, and I think that was more indicative of what it was.
Yeah, probably so. All right, kind of goes along with these. Cassie's asking, how do you view Mabry's job security? We're not able to hit against struggling pitchers or in hitters' parks at times. Now, again, this goes back to what John Mozeliak said to us on Sunday. He said he hoped that he was done making coaching changes, because he talked about how he didn't want people looking over their shoulders. But two, he talked about how disruptive it is for those people just in their personal lives as people, not as baseball people, but as baseball, as people, to, you know, disrupt their lives during the season. That the, you know, things that, you know, they, you know, expect to be in the job all year long, and then it's cut short and things of that nature, and, you know, maybe they have to move, maybe whatever. So I think basically my thought was, especially with Mike Matheny there, and I said this, or I even said this before Mo said this, and we've talked about it, Matheny's not going anywhere this year. Because if they're so bad in 4 to 6 weeks that they're selling, it doesn't do you any good to really, you know, Matheny might as well manage out the rest of the year, and you can decide what you want to do in the off season. I think the same thing goes for John Mabry. I'm not guaranteed. I'd almost say I feel kind of confident John Mabry will not be the hitting coach next year. But
sure.
I'm 100% sure that he will be the hitting coach for the rest of this year.
Well, I agree with that.
Okay, well, that's easy enough there. And our last one is, I'm scared to know your answers, but what are your thoughts on Grichuk? And we've touched on this a little bit, but I'll let you take a whack at it first.
Well, and anybody that's listened to this before knows that I'm high on Grichuk. I think that he's got the skill set's one of those that can play. I think that he's one of those guys, I've always said it, he'll rob some home runs, he'll throw some guys out, he'll make some bonehead plays, he'll take some bad routes. He'll hit some bombs, he'll drive in some runs, he'll hit a lot of extra base hits, but he's going to strike out a bunch. You know, if that combination could fit, if he would cut down on the strikeouts, he'll be a keeper. At this point, I'm not so sure that the organization hasn't given up on him, or they don't see him as him maybe being a change of scenery candidate. But I think we'll see him back in St. Louis. I just don't know if that's for the long term.
Yeah. You're right. I think we'll see him. But I feel like, boy, I don't know. it almost feels a little bit like Alan Craig in that, you know, mm-hmm. he's gone and he's just not hitting anymore. I think that, you know, I think Grichuk, he's got the potential in there. But boy, when you're not hitting in Memphis, I really think he's got to get going. I mean, last year at least, he went to Memphis, he hit pretty much immediately. They brought him back. He's going to have to hit down there to get another shot. And he's got one last shot in St. Louis. I'm pretty sure he's out of options after this year. So you can't keep doing the sending down thing. If you're going to upgrade that spot in the outfield as a spot where you could, I just can't imagine that he's got an extended future in St. Louis.
It seemed like the leash was short to start the year. And now, you know, I'm just not so sure that it's not worn out as welcome, but has done all he can with this organization.
Yeah, and that's possible. It just may be that it's never going to work. But, you know, I mean, there's still, like I said, there is still talent there. There's still possibilities, and if he can get on track in Memphis, maybe he'll get a shot up here. You know, Tommy Pham has... He had a great night tonight. I want to say he's done well over the last few years. Don't get me wrong, but I think he's kind of cooled off a little bit, and so there could be an opportunity for Grichuk to have a shot at getting some more playing time. But you know, the more that Pham gets, you know, kind of locked in, and the less that Grichuk does at Memphis, the harder it is to imagine that happening. And you know, who knows? I mean, if there's a team that thinks they can get something out of him, he very well could go in some sort of deal at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I agree. Not to switch gears, though. Something that kind of concerns me about Pham is I'm wondering if he hasn't talked his way into a deal at the deadline. You know what I mean? I think he's kind of been a little loose-lipped for this organization. And even the Nightingale article, He kind of painted the Cardinals in a corner a little bit, and you know, admitting to kind of trying to go in and quit and get his release and whatnot. And I'm kind of surprised he's still around after that. But after hearing that, I thought it was easy with Peralta. But what Mazalek said was, "Hey, he obviously wasn't happy being the 25th man," and I think that's why he was released and not traded. I think that the squeaky wheel got turned there, and I'm just wondering if Pham isn't saying enough. Just enough to maybe get his name out there on at the deadline a little bit more, which I think would open up a spot for Grichuk.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. It definitely one of the few people that you could sell high on, if nothing else. Although, given age and stuff, it does feel like Tommy Pham has. There's no love lost in this organization for Tommy Pham. I mean, he wants to play here because that's where he's playing. But if he had to move tomorrow to another organization that would let him play in the major leagues, he'd do it and not really worry about it. And that's fair. I mean, the organization has not necessarily been the greatest to him, although I think they stuck with him some degree with the injuries, with the eye issues. I think there are times where they could have let him go.
Sure.
They didn't. So it kind of goes both ways. But yeah, I could see him. Like I said, it feels like, you know, and Tommy Pham's not a long-term solution to this team anyway. I mean,
no.
You know, maybe next year at the most. But so, yeah, if somebody wants to buy that he can be a great guy to help this year, you know, go for it. You know, honestly, it's kind of like somebody pointed out on Twitter today talking about Jerko being a possibility. And I'm like, you know, I don't see this being a teardown. And they're like, no, it was more the fact that if somebody comes asking for him and is willing to overpay, then you sell him. And I think that to some degree, that's pretty much should be Mo's mindset anyway. It's not
No,
guys,
I agree.
Yeah, not guys that they're going to have to. They're not going to go out and looking to move Jed Jerko. But if somebody wants to talk about it and somebody wants to give you their top two prospects, which nobody's going to, but, you know, if they did, then you'd be silly to hold on to a guy that's not a core piece in a year, and maybe more than a year, that's going to be a struggle.
Yeah, that's that. I think that's a great point. To his contract's so friendly to the Cardinals that, you know, I don't think there's any way that they go dangling, but if someone is going to overpay, and I think there are going to be overpays this year, and that kind of goes into my Rosenthal theory, I think that the Nationals are going to have to get somebody, or they're going to be in trouble, because they may have this one run left in them with Harper. And I'm thinking they're going to have to go get somebody. Now, whether that's Robertson or, you know, one of the other White Sox guys, their bullpen's pretty good. Get one of those guys. Man, I just can't imagine what you can get as an overpay for Rosenthal. I mean, it's that's why I always bring that up. I'm thinking there's going to be a team that has to have that piece, and that's their weakness, of somebody locked down in the back of that pen, and they may way overpay for it, kind of like they did with Eaton.
Yeah, I think you're right. That window in Washington is, they've got to win. And they got to win this year. I mean, there's such, the National League is so wide open for them, really, that, yeah, if they can lock their bullpen down, so maybe they give a lot for an O or a Rosenthal. And you really have to think about it, especially Rosenthal. I mean, O is good for them, but O is not, you know, we talked about O. He's kind of iffy. He's better than anything they've got. They may not want, you know, but Rosenthal, that's a guy that you could keep and you could really build around. And
yeah,
I worry about what the Cardinal bullpen would look like after that. But again, it's not an issue for this year.
Yeah, that's it. He's a Boris client. You know, that's another thing that goes into it to me.
Also true. All right. Well, I thought we would do a short show today, and we didn't, because I don't think we can. It doesn't feel like it.
There was a lot of stuff that went on.
This is true. This is true, and I appreciate those that have said that we're an easy listen. Hopefully that most people feel that way, or at least, you know, they keep it running when they fall asleep. And then they get to the end of it and they say, hey, I listened to it all. So, again, the Cardinals playing the Orioles this weekend, the Phillies, Pittsburgh next weekend. Some weird stuff coming up with the calendar. You know, the Cardinals are in Baltimore, in Philadelphia. Then they come home for the three games with the Pirates and that one makeup with the Reds. Go out to Arizona for three, then come back home to play the Nationals. I'm not really sure what the deal is. With that scheduling, but you know, you deal with it, I guess, and you go on. Hopefully the Cardinals will be winning some games. Alan and I will be back at you next week we will not be with you next week. I forgot. Next week is going to be probably going to be found on the Conversations with C70 label, if you will. It's going to be an all-star mid-season podcast. Alan and I will be there. We'll also have Tara Wellman. We're going to have Holly and Laura from SDL Card Gals. And I'm missing one, aren't I? I think there was somebody else that was
Kevin
Reynolds from Decker Cards, from SDL Cards and stuff. He's going to be there, and we may have a couple more join us. So we're going to just kind of talk about the season as it is and where the season is going to be. But we're going to do that next Saturday. So be looking for that. We'll be tweeting in and stuff like that. So Alan and I will be back here for this show in 2 weeks, unless something crazy happens. If there's a big trade, or, you know, Mike Matheny gets fired, or John Mozeliak decides he's done, you know, all this kind of crazy stuff. You know, then, of course, we might try to do something. But chances are we'll be back in 2 weeks. So come back and join us then. So for Alan, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Shooter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!